driving you home every weekday afternoon. This is 105 Drive with Julian Clover.
The Unsigned Chart on Cambridge 105.
So 3 minutes past six on a Thursday night. We'll start off the entertainment hour. Sky Keeble will be here in a moment or two with some film reviews. Just after half past six, we'll be hearing from the actor Terence Stamp. He's been in conversation with Toby Miller on a recent visit to Cambridge. But off we go then, the update on the Unsigned Chart. And oh, dearie me, whatever happened to the poor old Flo? You may remember they came in on this programme a couple or so weeks ago to the live session. You can still find that. But for whatever reason, they didn't manage to secure enough votes and they are out of the chart. We'll give a full rundown of what's happening in the Unsigned Chart in just a moment. But let's dip into the chart, shall we? At number three, we've got this, which is turning into a bit of a long runner, really, from Radar. This is Airstrip 1.
I just realized someone's watching me. Every time I go out, I'm on closed circuit TV. When I'm driving in my car, they know where I've been and when. They can probably figure out when I'll go there again. They can track you down within a meter or two. There's nothing you can do. You buy, and they can tell what you eat. If they go through your garbage, their information's complete. Is that a hidden camera in the corner of my room? They tape my conversations and they tap my phone. It's not just paranoia. We'll be right back.
I think the comment has been made that song is something of a grower. Radar and Airstrip 1. It is number 3 in this week's unsigned chart. But what's happening to the rest? Let's find out.
The top 5 records from Cambridge's hottest musicians, as voted for by you.
So at number 5, Lux Lane, Made Mistakes. 4 is Chasing the Effect, Hero. 3, song you heard there, Radar, Airstrip 1. 2 is Three Patch Problem, Eventually. And number 1, again, it's B Music and The Forest. There's also a new entry for you to vote for. That's Alice Rayner. It's a beautiful song played for you during the course of the next 7 days, Fallen For You. And you can find out the details on the Cambridge 105 website of how to vote. Just go to cambridge105.fm. Follow the links over on the right-hand side. And the unsigned chart, of course, is made up entirely of your votes. And thanks to the unsigned musicians of Cambridge and the surrounding area for sending us their tracks. Actually, on recent form, thanks to the musicians of Bury St Edmunds for doing it. Let's have a listen to the number one, then.
The Unsigned Chart on Cambridge 105.
Is absolutely beautiful. It's still number one in the unsigned chart, B Music and The Forest, at 12 minutes after 6 o'clock. Tim Willett will give you the Unsigned Chart in Full next Wednesday evening, just after 8 o'clock, as part of the New Music Generator programme. But on Monday night, Neil Whiteside will be here at round about this time, and he'll give you the midway point, so you get a kind of idea of how the voting's going. And this week, I have to say, the voting, certainly in the middle section of the chart, was just oh so close. I think B-Music was a little way ahead of everybody, but good to see them there. Week 50 of the chart, another couple of weeks, and it'll be the first anniversary. 17 minutes past 6 o'clock, it's Thursday, and so Sky Keeble is here to look at some of the latest movie reviews. How are you, Sky?
I'm very well, thank you. I went and watched a new film, Broken City, last night. It's a crime thriller, also a political thriller as well, starring Russell Crowe and Mark Wahlberg, and it's a film that power and corruption are very, very strange things, and if you have too much of it, the only thing to protect you is proof.
Ooh.
There are some wars you fight, and some wars you walk away from. This isn't the fighting kind.
Green Sally up, and Green Sally down.
When I was elected mayor, this was a broken city. Tell me things haven't changed.
You know who I am?
Yeah. Step by step, I've been getting it fixed.
It's all right. Calm down, okay?
Tell me things haven't changed.
Here's our guy.
Mr. Mayor.
You, in my eyes, hero.
Thank you.
You ever do any hunting? You should try it. You would be a natural.
I'm not sure I'm following you, Mayor.
I need you to find the son of a bitch who's sleeping with my wife.
Done. All right, Katie, you're my eyes. What do we have?
Oh, I got him. And it's good, Billy.
You have an envelope of photographs that I paid for.
When you called, I didn't think it'd be for something like this.
I think you're about to see the bigger picture.
This is what you do now, Billy. You set up executions.
I gave him pictures and walked away.
This is not what you think it is.
You ever think why I chose you? Because I own you.
Oh dear, will they live or die? I suspect the latter.
Well, it's a very gritty film dealing with Mark Wahlberg plays a disgraced cop who is saved by the mayor, and is played by Russell Crowe. Many years later, the mayor asks Mark Wahlberg to help him in an adultery scandal involving the mayor's wife, played by Catherine Zeta-Jones. But you find out it's a little bit more than that. Obviously, it's all very seedy. There's corruption. There's real estate involved. And it's more. I didn't expect it to be as good. I went in with sort of an open mind because it felt very much a genre film. You know, it's kind of typical of the crime political thriller, and but it was much more character driven than I thought it would be, and you know, not so driven by cliche narrative as much. So it was definitely great performances by the leads, and it's a rated a 15, and I recommend it if you've got an evening free to go catch it. Of course, it is finishing this week, and when I say that, I mean you'll be able to catch it tonight, and then you won't be able to see it in Cambridge.
So, by the sounds of things, a very short run.
It has got a short run. So I say it's very much. It doesn't bring anything new to the table, but for what it is, and if you like that kind of genre, you'll enjoy it, certainly. You can catch it at Cineworld tonight at 20 to 9, or at View at 9 o'clock tonight. And that's Broken City for you.
OK, we've also got Stoker to talk about. What's the plot line to that?
Well, what did I make of it? I was quite anticipating it, really, because I watch a little bit of Asian Far Eastern cinema, and this is the English debut of South Korean director Park Chan-wook, who some people may have seen some of his other films like Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance or Old Boy. And I think if you're going in without prior knowledge of any of his previous work, you'll find the film very beautiful to look at. The story is very dark and very violent. It's rated an 18, and it's very peculiar. And I'll let the trailer go into a bit more detail.
Okay, let's have a listen.
You know, I've often wondered why it is we have children. And the conclusion I've come to is we want someone to get it right this time. But not me. Personally speaking, I can't wait to watch life tear you apart.
Indigo, is something wrong?
Yes. My father is dead.
Richard Stoker was a family man. Taken from us by a cruel twist of fate, the reasons for which are unknown.
India, come and say hello to your Uncle Charlie.
Hello, India.
I'm curious about what happened to my father.
Stoker.
Or do you go by Stroker now?
Because I hear that's what your mom's been doing to your uncle.
Couldn't we talk about your living here with Charlie like this?
It's a bad habit, you know.
Sneaking up on people?
Following uncles around.
There we go, the trailer for Stoker.
Yes, I was a bit dubious of some of the dialogue there, but as you can get, it deals with a lot of dark themes regarding family, as murder, and obviously the loss of innocence. It stars Mia Wasikowska, who, if any of you listened to the competition last week, plays a role in one of Tim Burton's films, adaptations of Lewis Carroll novel.
Yeah, it's certainly not typecasting, is it?
No, no. And also it has Nicole Kidman playing a very cold mother, and Matthew Good, who you might remember from films like Watchmen, playing the very unnerving Uncle Charlie. And I really enjoy it. It's definitely similar to the director's previous work. It's got a wonderful soundtrack, and it really deals with a lot of odd noises, like proper bringing it to the foreground.
It was, I found, you know, when I was looking at the metronome, they're very atmospheric.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the kind of film.
Quite dark as well.
Yeah,
I thought
it's almost horror, but not. And say it's very violent. There's a lot of sexualized violence in it as well. But it's all very to the point and, you know, appropriate.
What sort of rating has this one got?
It is an 18.
Yes,
so it's a particular kind of audience, but it's definitely worth a watch if you're at all interested in the subject matter or the style. It's a very stylish film, and yeah, you can catch it at Cineworld at 5 to 7 or 9:15 tonight, or it's on a late showing tomorrow at Cineworld at 10:30, but View aren't showing it, and neither are Picture House. So these films are pretty much sort of on the final run, as it were, but they're worth checking out later on when they come out in DVD.
I did see, I think because you mentioned it last week, really, I did spy a poster in London in the week in the King's Cross Underground for Stoker, so yeah. It's getting some promotion, obviously. It's going to be across London as well as Cambridge.
It's got a good cast, good high-profile cast, and I think it will, you know, bring more to that genre, I think.
So. Okay. 26 minutes past 6 o'clock, still to come a few sort of bits and pieces of news from Sky, and then we've got this interview with the actor Terence Stamp, one of the 60s icons, but he was in Cambridge recently to promote the movie Song for Marianne. You've seen that one, I think.
No, I've not seen it, not got round to it. It's only had a few showings, to be honest, but
it was at the Picture House, of course, hence the appearance of Mr. Stamp there. What do you think? You've seen much of his other work? I remember once tuning in, I think late night Channel 4, and finding the Collector, which was one of his sort of earlier films.
Not seen that. I can remember All Hail Zod from Superman, and I think...
Also had a role in Heroes, of course, as well. I think in Series 1, possibly Series 2.
Yeah. He's definitely a face to recognise, and I'm sure I've seen him in things, but he's just...
Yeah, I think he's disappeared from the to my mind, at least, whilst he has had the Superman role you mentioned and also the TV appearance in Heroes. He's not an actor whilst he's probably still his body of work, I guess, most people would think, oh, Terrence Stamp, 1960s, Julie Christie, all that side of things.
I didn't actually mention before about Stoker. I could talk about Stoker for quite a bit because it's quite a rich text. But, the person who actually wrote the script for it, if any of you watched Prison Break...
That was on Channel 5 over here, my memory serves me right.
All right.
I think so.
Yeah, and one of the main characters, the guy who has all the tattoos, like in the first series, he's got all the tattoos with the thing on his back, Wentworth Miller, I think the actor's name is, he actually wrote the script for the screenplay.
Has he got more tattoos than you?
So, well, I don't know if those ones were real, otherwise he would have more. But,
oh, okay.
But, yeah, just an interesting bit of trivia there. And also, coming out tomorrow, we've got lots of new films out. We've got Side Effects, the new Steven Soderbergh one. He only recently brought out Contagion. But here's one that follows a similar vein in dealing with pharmaceutical companies and new experimental drugs. Stars Rooney Mara, Channing Tatum, Jude Law and Catherine Zeta-Jones again, and it looks like an interesting thriller.
I think I saw a trail for that when I was actually had some time to watch some television, and I quite like the look of that.
Yeah, so that's one to check out. Also, Parker, a new Jason Statham film. I'm not so keen on this, to be honest, but you know what you're getting with the Jason Statham film. It's going to be action.
I noticed the poster.
Yeah, it's about a professional burglar who gets betrayed, possibly left for dead, and then goes out seeking revenge on the guys who screwed him over. And it's got Jennifer Lopez in as well.
I noticed the poster.
Yeah, and you've got Guilt Trip. It's got Seth Rogen and Barbara Streisand in, about a young guy, inventor/businessman, who's concerned about his mother, so brings him along on a road trip, and it's a comedy, so that might be worth watching. And of course the big one is Oz, so we've got that. In fact, we haven't done an Oz competition, have we? But I do have some stuff to give away, so I could do that.
I click my heels together. Will we have a prize?
Yeah, we do have prizes coming. I've just remembered, actually. So, but yeah, Oz.
Shall we do that next week? Shall we do that next week so we can sort of do a sort of a build up to it?
Yeah, certainly. Yes. So, say to you next week. More people to come listen in.
Precisely.
Also, let us know what you think of it. So, Oz, the Great and Powerful, meant to be a kind of prequel to the original Wizard of Oz story, dealing with the wizard himself, who is, from what I gather, just a, charlatan magician type.
Yeah, he was running in the film. He runs a little sideshow in the black and white bit at the beginning.
Yeah,
runs a little sideshow.
Yeah, without spoiling too much, it does follow a lot of the sort of similar style used in The Wizard of Oz, dealing with the dreary black and white, and then turns into the wonderful colour of the magical world of Oz, and where he meets the three witches.
There's four at this point, because at the start of The Wizard of Oz, Dorothy lands on the Wicked Witch of the, one of them, South, and then the North. Is it the North or South she lands on?
I'm assuming there was at least four witches.
Well, four
at one
compass
point.
It makes kind of sense. Yeah. Unless Hansel and Gretel had bumped them off in another movie.
Yeah, that's a good point. To be honest, I'm a bit vague on it. But from what I can tell from the trailer, and that's all I'm going from, it does look visually good. You've got the little, what are they called? What are the little people on the Yellow Brick Road?
Munchkins.
That's the one. They're in it. You've got the Emerald City, got lots of magic and drama. And it's also out in 3D and 2D. So, that's one to look out for.
We shall follow the Yellow Brick Road.
In fact,
follow.
Yeah, wonderful. Yes, I'm sure there's lots of singing and dancing in it as well.
Is there really singing and dancing?
Well, I imagine the Munchkins will do one.
Okay, I guess so.
And there's also flying monkeys as well, if you didn't like them from the first one, so watch out.
I can't remember flying monkeys in The Wizard. Is there flying monkeys? Nodded that here. Okay, fine.
And also, this is directed by Sam Raimi as well, so he's done Spider-Man, lots of other ones. Okay, ones more Evil Dead and stuff like that, which they are remaking quite soon as well. But that's not out for some time later. So they're your films for the week.
That's pretty packed, actually.
Good mixture.
Thank you very much. We'll see you next week, Sky. Thank you very much. Now, since starting his career in 1962, Terence Stamp has appeared in over 60 films. His latest, A Song for Marion, was marked with an appearance at the Arts Picture House in Cambridge. And that's where Terence caught up with Bums on Seats' Toby Miller. Let's have a listen.
Hello, Arthur.
What are you lot doing here?
We're going to be singing.
Better get some folks who can sing, then.
Did Grandad tell you he came to hear us singing?
I wouldn't call it singing.
Why don't you join in? Lay some beats.
Well, that is. Bloody cracker, you lot.
Marion! Marion!
If there's anything I can do.
Haven't you done enough, you lot?
One of the things I really liked about it was that when I read the script, there wasn't any kind of obvious pressing of emotional buttons. And so I thought to myself, this director, this writer-director, is obviously like an actor or an ex-actor who understands to leave things to the actor. So there were no kind of obvious emotional triggers. And that's what I really loved about the movie. And I thought that normally might be very foreboding for a performer, but it's not foreboding for a performer like me. That's the kind of things I'm looking for. I'm looking for the subtleties of emotion that I was moved by when I was a boy.
You say you came to this production late, which surprises me slightly because I can't imagine Arthur being played by many other characters, partly because Arthur seems to come a little bit from your accepted screen persona, but then goes deeper and deeper and deeper as the film goes on. How much of that character was in the script? And how much did you discuss afterwards with Paul, the writer-director, and bring in during production?
I came into it late in terms of finance. I thought it was a beautiful screenplay, and I thought it was dealing with a very unusual subject.